Keith Mosier.
If you'd like to open your New Testament to the 19th chapter of Matthew, we'll look at some things that are said there about marriage. I want to talk this morning about the commitment of marriage, a chronology of marriage, and finally the cleaving in marriage. But you'll notice in verse 3 that the Pharisees came to Jesus tempting Him, saying, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" His answer is, "Have you not read that He which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, cleave unto his wife, and they two should be one flesh.'" A passage very familiar to us. But notice the commitment as He answered their question. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? He said, "Haven't you read?" They were being confused by a rabbi named Hillel, who was teaching people that a wife could be put away for any reason. Any uncleanness found in her, as he translated Deuteronomy 24:1, was an excuse to end the marriage. Because of that confusion, the Pharisees came trying to trap Jesus between the two schools of thought. But Jesus will not allow that. He will go to the Scriptures and go all the way back to the beginning and say, as far as commitment goes, it's a male and a female for life. And God doesn't want it any other way. Haven't you read that? Is it important to read that? Look over at Matthew 22 a moment. In the 22nd chapter of Matthew, we have the Sadducees coming to Jesus. Beginning in verse 23, "The same day came to Him the Sadducees, which say that there is no resurrection, and asked Him, saying, 'Master, Moses said, if a man die, having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up seed unto his brother.'" This is known as the levirate law, oftentimes not followed. One of the reasons Boaz was able to marry Ruth was the fellow who was in the levirate position didn't want her. And he was then given a shoe, and he had to go around Israel as a man who took a shoe. That's not a good thing when you don't follow God's law. "We have then there with us seven brothers. And the first, when he had married a wife, died, and having no issue, left his wife unto his brother. Likewise the second also, and the third unto the seventh." And then it says, "And last of all, the woman died also." Jesus said, "You guys made two mistakes. You err not knowing the Scriptures, nor the power of God. For in the resurrection they neither marry," now I want us to keep this in mind, "nor are given in marriage." Jesus said, "One man, one woman, one male, one female for life. And in the resurrection, they don't marry. No need for it. There's no gender need here. No need to have children. They don't die in heaven, but are as the angels of God in heaven." The angels cannot marry, cannot have children. "But as touching the resurrection of the dead," here's his line, "have you not read?" How important it is for us to read the instructions on marriage. "Have you not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying," watch the passage He chooses, the Lord, "to show them the resurrection. Have you not read that God said, 'I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob.'" Did you get resurrection out of that? "I am the God of Abraham." When that was said, Abraham's body had been dead for 1,000 years. So Isaac, so Jacob. But God said, "I am their God." Not "I will be," not "I was," but "I am." Meaning that Abraham was still living. And so Jesus concluded from the passage, God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. Well, if God can keep Abraham and Isaac and Jacob alive somewhere for over a millennium, it won't be any problem for Him to bring them back from the dead, to give them a new body. But it isn't an impossibility with God. Haven't you read that? And if you'd read it, you'd know there was a resurrection. Well, why don't we read God's instructions on marriage? It's that important. "Have you not read?" Go back now to Matthew 19. "For this cause shall a man and leave his mother and father." A man, a male. "And I want one male and one female for life." Now watch the question that the apostles asked Him. Verse 7. "Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away?" He didn't. But please open your Old Testament to Deuteronomy, the 24th chapter, for a moment. Here, Moses is regulating a situation that had already occurred. When you read a law in the Old Testament, please remember that. He didn't make up the law ahead of time. anticipating a problem. He has a problem and he regulates it under inspiration by God. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he hath found some uncleanness in her. Here's where the trouble started. This particular liberal school under Rabbi Hillel said, uncleanness means anything. A school led by a rabbi named Shammai said, no, this is just fornication and nothing else. Then let him write her a bill of divorcement, give it in her hand, and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. Now, some have read that to mean that once she's put away, she has permission to remarry even though she fornicated. That is not what verse 2 means. I asked my Hebrew teacher about that word may. This Hebrew teacher has a double PhD in the Hebrew language. He told me this is what she might do. It isn't permission, but this is what she might do. She might go and get remarried. Well, what happens if she does? Look at the next verse. And if the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house, or if the latter husband die which took her to be his wife, her former husband which sent her away may not take her again to be his wife. After that she is defiled. How did she get defiled if she had permission to remarry the second time? Not possible. In fact, she defiled the land by this absolutely immoral thing to do. A fornicating partner under the Mosaic dispensation had no permission to remarry. Same under the Christian dispensation. Same thing. Now go back to Matthew 19:9 with me a moment. And I want to look at something Jesus says. It wasn't a command that they had to put her away. You remember Joseph pondered over this when he thought that Mary had fornicated and they were legally betrothed when he thought that. But the angel told him, no, this is from God. Joseph had minded to put her away privately. He could have had her stoned. He had those two choices. But in the case of Mary, of course, she had not fornicated. And Joseph, being a just man, kept her and was proud to do so. But we go back now to Matthew 19, verse 8. Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffer you to put away your wives, but from the beginning, it was not so. It isn't a command to put her away. It is the only reason you can do it and remarry. And so it is that we work it out if we can. That's my recommendation always, because God wants one man and one woman for life. Now we come to a most important word about commitment. Look at verse 9 now, and the first word. It's A-N-D. This little word, two letters in the Greek, delta epsilon, D-E. It's not in the first place in the Greek sentence. It cannot be, according to their grammar. But it's translated that way, and. It can mean moreover, but it also can mean but. And here's the rub. If Jesus said, but I say unto you, he's changing something from what Moses said. I believe the King James translators have it exactly correct, that Jesus didn't change the Mosaic instruction at all. He simply reiterated it. What Moses said was, you can put your wife away for uncleanness, fornication. In other words, the school of Shammai had it right. That's all that God ever allowed. Do you know why? Because God hates divorce. Malachi chapter 2. God has always hated divorce. He wants one man and one woman for life. And I say unto you, the same thing Moses did. Well, why did Moses allow us to put her away? What a strange thing it is when a mate fornicates. It's a sin unlike any other. It has the same consequences as all sin, but it's a sin unlike any other. It's a sin against my own body, against my mate, against the one with whom I fornicated, and against God. And because of that, some people cannot bring themselves to live with the mate who has fornicated. And so they are allowed to put that one away. And it's a strange sin from this sense. I can forgive that person and still put her away. Because it's allowed. It's something that's done to the heart of that mate that makes it so hard that he or she cannot bring himself or herself to live with that person. God allows that. But it's the only reason for putting away a mate and remarrying. There is no other. Well, what about the mate that's put away? Not eligible for marriage ever again. Look at the end of verse 9. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. The guilty party cannot remarry. Look over at Matthew 5 for a moment and keep in mind the Mosaic legislation. If she remarries that guilty person, she is defiled. But some of the rabbis were saying, but Moses said she may go and be another man's wife. She had permission. No. Jesus said, you read it wrong. Look at verse 31 of Matthew 5. It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. That's from Deuteronomy 24. That's what we were reading. But I say unto you, here, let's interpret that correctly, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. Why? Because some of the rabbis were teaching she had permission when she didn't. Well, that would cause her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. Jesus said, you read that legislation wrong. You interpreted it wrong. And now you're causing some of these women to think they can remarry when they can't. And so you're causing her to commit adultery. Why are we saying all of this? To make the point that when a couple, a beautiful young couple, stands in front of me and I say, I now pronounce you man and wife, that's a commitment. That's a lifetime commitment. I get the impression, sadly, that sometimes she's thinking, when I get him home, I'll change him. And he's thinking, she better treat me right or I'll get another one. You can't trade in your wife. Once you say, I do, that's forever. Unless she ceases to be a female. Or unless I cease to be a male. You know when that is? We read it in Matthew 22. When we die, we become as the angels in heaven. So Michael, when you die, you cease to be a male. And when you die and cease to be a male, the female to whom you're married is allowed to have another male. And the same thing would go for Stephanie. When she ceases to be a female, Michael can get another one. And that's the way it is. Romans 7, 1 through 3. Notice the two exceptions then. Death and fornication. There aren't any others. Why does God put it that way? God knows how weak we are. How we live and how we act. And what marriage is. You heard about that young lady who prayed and prayed for her knight in shining armor? Would he come? And then she met him. This is the one. This is the one that God sent me. Oh, she was so excited and she fell in love. And boy, they got married, Riley, and for about 2 weeks everything was fine. Oh, it was wonderful. And then they went home. And when he would eat, she'd notice he made some awfully funny noises. And funnier noises when he slept. Toothpaste all over the sink, clothes all over the floor. And sometimes he didn't smell so good. And I mean, it was... And so she got back down on her knees and she said, Father, I think you gave me the wrong one. Nope. That's the one. And that's the one, after the honeymoon's over, that we need to learn to love. Because that's when learning how to love starts. Did you ever realize why God put us in a congregation? Andrew, take a look at this face. As good as it gets, brother, and you've got to spend eternity with me. And as unlovable as this face is, you've got to learn to love it. That's why we're in a congregation, so we can learn how to love one another, so we can learn how to love the unlovable, because that's what the Lord does, and He wants us to learn that. Well, that's what marriage is all about, to learn to love the unlovable in the other person. That takes work. It takes commitment. I don't have an out here. I've got to learn how to do it. Thankfully, I have a wife that taught me how.